In Washington, D.C., there's a farce going on, a public ridiculous farce. The impeachment of Donald Trump by the Democrats. And here's why it's a farce. They're moving so fast. They're moving so fast that it's obvious that it's not about really getting to the bottom of things or even doing an impeachment. It's about fundraising and posturing and gesturing with that supercilious fool, Adam Schiff, and even Nancy Pelosi is being dragged into it. And what bothers me is not Trump. I mean, I know my good friends on the left are going to say, oh, you're protecting Trump. But here's the thing. If you can impeach the president on this, you can impeach the president, next president, on anything. Is that what you want? Is that what we want in a country where every president is going to be impeached based on policy differences with Democrats or Republicans upset about who won the election and who lost the election? Is that where we're going? You know, we could have impeached, the country could have impeached Abraham Lincoln for the suspension of habeas corpus, all right, during the Civil War. We could have impeached Barack Obama for all the times he said, I've got a phone and a pen. I don't have to follow your laws. I'm going to just make my own, which I don't think is in the Constitution. We could have impeached him over Benghazi. We could have impeached, you know, depending on the president you like or don't like, it's not a function of impeachment. And to tell you how bad it was, there was one law professor who brought up, who was testifying, who brought up Barron Trump. She ripped on the president saying, you can't make your, you can't make nobility in this country. Even if your son is named Barron, you can't make him a Barron. That's how low and cheap it's gotten. But at least there was one person, Jonathan Turley, a Democrat, not supporting of Trump at all, law professor, respected national figure, who laid it out about what a farce this was.
I believe this impeachment not only fails to satisfy the standard of past impeachments, but would create a dangerous precedent for future impeachments. This would be the first impeachment in history where there would be considerable debate, and in my view, not compelling evidence of the commission of a crime. Second is the abbreviated period of this investigation, which is problematic and puzzling.
But that's Washington. And this is Chicago. And all politics is local. And that's why we're bringing you Ray Long, Chicago Tribune, talking about the FBI and what they're doing, bringing in Madigan's friends, Boss Madigan's friends, and asking them about lobbyists and this and that and all the other. We'll be talking to him. And we'll also talk to Jeremy Gorner, another Chicago Tribune reporter, on the soap opera of Eddie Johnson and that driver of his at Sirius Cafe, and how it all relates, and listen to me, you coppers who are listening, because this is important to you, how it all relates to the underlying problem. It's not whether he had a girlfriend and got drunk. It's what's going on underneath with the merit promotions that is at the heart of cynicism in the Chicago Police Department. Jeff Carlin is here from the Rokan Show on WGN. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist of the Chicago Tribune. Yeah, nationally syndicated, but, you know, you knew that. Member of its editorial board. And if you do anything for me besides listening to this show, this podcast, and writing us a kick-ass review on iTunes and elsewhere, it's this. Go see No Safe Spaces. Because this used to be a free country where you could say what you want. And apparently it's not now. You have to see the movie with Dennis Prager, Adam Carolla, Van Jones, Barack Obama. It's not just a conservative's creed. Liberals are concerned too, because they're the first ones that will be devoured by the left. The Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon. trapped in a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
It's no secret that every political player in Illinois, particularly those worried about the FBI and the ongoing, sprawling political corruption investigation from Springfield to Chicago, are reading the Chicago Tribune. And the reason they're reading it, for reporters like Ray Long and Jason Meisner, who had an amazing story the other day, something people on this podcast have already been thinking about, FBI agents asking questions about House Speaker Madigan and his political operation, say four people they've interviewed. Ray Long, Chicago Tribune, my friend and colleague, is with us. What kind of impact is this story having today, Ray?
Well, a lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people are tweeting about it. A lot of people are emailing me and saying, you know, that this is the kind of thing they've been waiting to see. A lot of people obviously have viewed this as a possibility that Madigan was being asked about by the feds. And that's because there have been so many stories that are related to him that have been breaking. We've written over the last few months that there have been raids on several of his acolytes' houses, like Mike McLean and Quincy, Kevin Quinn, the brother of Alderman Marty Quinn, who is Madigan's handpicked alderman. Kevin Quinn's house was raided. Mike Zalewski, the former alderman, his house was raided. There have been a variety of other developments throughout town. We've seen a city club subpoena that had Madigan's name on it. So the logical extension was, are they asking about Madigan? So a lot of people could think about it, but you have to go out and actually find the people who have been interviewed and write about it.
Yeah, the people who just think about it are me, and the people that actually go talk to people about it are you. But, you know, I do talk to people myself, Ray. I got the message,
right,
buddy.
Right.
You think that we were friends. I thought we were friends, and you gave me that shot.
I didn't mean that about you.
I'm just teasing you.
Yeah, yeah.
The main aspect of this, of course, and you listed some of the things that have been going on, but the feds, the FBI, and we know from Robert Grant, we know two that we had on the podcast last week, we know several of the players who are in the FBI on the public corruption squad. They've been asking about Madigan and particular lobbyists. Now, what's happened with Mike, Boss Madigan, over the years? It seems like the lobbyists, the crew, the most favored, trusted of the trusted, that was another great story you had, they've become more prevalent in the Madigan political operations over time. Why is that?
Well, I think it's partly because he's been around so long. Madigan's been speaker since 1983, so people go through his staff. It's kind of like on-the-job training. He sees how hard they work. They show their smarts. Then they leave the staff, and they go out and become lobbyists. And they then are among some of the people that Madigan will have conversations with. If you get the right lobbyist, you are in a lot better stead with Madigan than if you are just a random lobbyist off the street.
And Ray, being somebody who's I've always looked up to in working in Springfield and you know, just dealing with all this, the repercussions or the reverberations of this in Springfield, I mean, has everybody stopped talking to anybody now?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we've written that Terry Link, a senator from Lake County, was wearing a wire for quite some time, and we've known that Mike McLean, the speaker's close confidant from Quincy, a ComEd lobbyist, former ComEd lobbyist, his phone was wiretapped. So we know that there are a variety of people who are rethinking how they do business, for sure.
Well, one thing that happens in Springfield is that, and I think and there's no charges against Mike Madigan, there have been none, no accusations except from me that he's too powerful and from others, but I mean no criminal accusations, is that when you're so powerful and control all the legislation, nothing moves in and out of the House without Madigan's personal say-so. He's not surprised by anything. So for lobbyists, this involves a lot of money. And for clients, from ComEd all the way down and up, that involves a lot of money. The law involves money. Regulations involve money. Rate hikes and protections of nuclear power plants in the Quad Cities and in Des Moines is a lot of money. And I guess the argument would be, if they make a RICO case involving Madigan, it would be that as boss of everything, he controlled everything. And there were benefits to be had by being in his posse. And those benefits were money. Does that sound logical to you?
Yeah, I just don't know exactly how they're putting this together. I understand the logic that you're going with there. I just can't confirm that's what they're talking about.
And that's why we love Ray Long and our next guest, who is Jeremy Gorner, guys who are on the up and up always, even though we try to lure them into these tales and dark corners.
It's just
good attempt.
Look, it's just a different, it's not that they don't have opinions. Ray and right. Jeremy do have opinions, just like you do, and maybe I do. But it's that the function of the job at the Chicago Tribune is not like, we're not like a cable news service.
Right.
So there are people who are paid to offer opinions, and there are people who are paid to just report and analyze. And I think my colleagues, at least the ones we've had on this podcast, respect that distinction and stay with
it. Absolutely. Yeah, and I appreciate that.
I just want to make that clear for anybody who might talk about collusion. Not that they would be working with Mike Madigan, but if they were, you know what I mean, Steve Brown? I'm just saying hi. Jeff's laughing, and I can't see Ray's face. Ray, what's the next step? When are the indictments coming, man?
Well, we just don't know where they're going next. You know, they've thrown subpoenas all over the suburbs. They've brought people in. They're clearly taking a big net approach, and then seeing whether they can hone in on specific individuals. At that point, then we'll see what kind of fireworks they've got.
All right, Ray. And before we do let you go, I got one more question for you. Where's the FBI on Mike Madigan's son and Mesro Financial? Do we have any developments there?
Don't have any knowledge of that. We wrote back in as early as 2012 that Andrew Madigan, who works for Mesro, an insurance company, has received business in some of the south suburbs, but we don't have any information about what you're asking about.
Are those the same south suburbs that you were speaking to where all the subpoenas are flying? Just curious.
You know, that's a good question. It's been a while since I wrote that story, so I can't remember which suburbs and which subpoenas. Sure. I don't want to give you wrong information.
You know what I'm thinking, Ray? The next time we do this podcast, there's a restaurant on 59th and Kedzie in Martin Sandoval's old district.
Yeah.
I think you can get, like, I think it's like an asphalt-themed Mexican restaurant. You hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think we should go there for, like, you know, some research and maybe do the podcast from there. Maybe, Marty,
that's a good idea.
I would like, you know, get a table. Maybe Mike Vondra and Marty Sandoval could come over and we could talk to them. Are you game?
If they want to talk.
Ray Long, Chicago Tribune. You can follow him at Ray Long on Twitter. Jason Meisner as well. And these guys have been kicking ass, man. And these are
great
stories.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks, Ray.
All right. Thanks, John and Jeff. Thanks.
Bye, buddy.
Get your paper. Get your paper. I'm here to shout it. Read all about it. Get your paper. Read about the guy who murdered his rival. Getting the electric chair. Read about a country's fight for survival. Read about the county fair.
If there's anybody who reminds me of Humphrey Bogart in spirit, it's our next guest, Jeremy Gorner, police reporter, Chicago Tribune.
I've never quite heard that comparison before, but I'll take it.
So we lost the police superintendent, Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell happened?
Well, October 17th, the early morning hours, somebody called 911. He was about a block away from his home in Bridgeport on his way home. And said that, you know, there's a man who's asleep, slumped over in his vehicle, in his black Tahoe. Police arrive. You know, the information we're getting is that they go up to the car, see if he's okay. Superintendent flashes his identification, says, yeah, I'm okay, or something
on the,
to that.
On the side window.
On the side window. The car is running, too, when they find him.
In the middle of the street, not, or is it parked?
It's kind of at a stop sign. I know the
right.
initial narrative out there was that he pulled over to the side of the road, but the dispatch records say that he was at a stop sign. Doesn't say anything about him being pulled over at the side of the road.
And so, how far from where he lives? Because there's kind of a mystery there.
It's probably about a block or two away. 34th place in Aberdeen. I mean, there's really not a lot of room over there to pull over. I mean, it's
right.
It's
narrow streets, and it's old-timey Bridgeport.
Old-timey Bridgeport near, what is that, Phil's Pizza's, like a block away. Like, yeah.
Jeremy always says the good Chinese restaurants to go to.
Oh, I'm a North Sider, but I mean.
I know, and he knows all these places.
He
and Will Lee go to, like, anyway, I don't want to get into the Chinese. So, okay, so he's pulled over.
Yeah, yeah.
He was in the street.
He was in the street.
We don't know if it was in drive or park.
Somebody calls 911, says that there's a person who's asleep, slumped over, and the police get there, a couple of beat cops, 9th district, and
where his wife, Eddie's wife, is a lieutenant.
Correct. She wouldn't have been working that shift, though.
It was nighttime.
It was,
she works days.
It was 12:30 in the morning, something like that, and he flashed his identification and drove off. I mean, we're obviously still, like everybody else, wanting to see the body camera footage and any other video footage out there.
The question for me is, number one, you had this great story on this thing and broke it. You know, they were drinking it. He and a woman, not his wife.
Mm-hmm. Which I want to come back to.
Yeah, we'll come back. All the juicy stuff. At Ceres Cafe, you broke that. You also had the questions to me. Is what happens after he drives away. So you've got Lori Lightfoot and the inspector general now investigating. Responding officers let him roll, apparently. He's like, I'm okay, I'm the boss. You want to arrest me? And they didn't want to arrest him. So I'm assuming. And he takes off. Then you have paperwork that has to be filed,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm sure they told their sergeant, gee, sergeant, we just stopped Eddie. What are we going to do? And then it went up the chain of command. Who else is going to get burned on this?
Right.
The watch commander, the commander, Who else?
That's something that they're going to look at. They're looking at, obviously, several different officers and who've been involved in this, everything from the time that, you know, they went to check on him when he was in the car,
right,
to, you know, supervisors who were working that night. I mean, it could be any number of people. And obviously, there's a lot of information that's unknown right now, at least, you know, on our end.
As we speak, yeah.
Right, that we're still trying to report out. But, yeah, I mean, he and this woman were at Ceres for, the information I received, about 3 hours. As you know,
A generous pour, my friend.
A generous pour. I mean, it's one of those, I don't know about one of those bars. I mean, what they're, you know, what kind of distinguishes them, you know, they'll give you a big glass of, you know, vodka or whiskey,
right,
or whatever.
Yes, for rum and Coke.
Yes,
you get basically a water glass full of rum and a little half can of Coke.
A little half can of Coke, and you do what... And as Josh Knoll said in his story the other day, you right, do what you wish with that can of Coke or
right,
whatever. And
I'm sure they're busy now.
Yeah. And he was there. So Johnson and this woman, they were there for, yeah, I was told about 3 hours on the evening of October 16th. So this would have been hours before he was found in his vehicle in Bridgeport. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, as part of the IG investigation, I know they were going to various businesses in the Loop area, in the vicinity of Jackson and Clark, right around the Board of Trade, that
right,
area, looking for video footage and so on and so forth.
And because it's the Board of Trade, Jeremy and Jeff, because of the Board of Trade, there's a lot of cameras everywhere around there.
Right.
In the building, in the hallways, everywhere.
Right, and not just that, too, even outside of the buildings, if they're trying to retrace, you know, the superintendent's steps, if they were, you know, they could very easily find cameras from that building and surrounding buildings that could potentially show his car, you know, his comings and goings in that area at a certain time.
Right.
But, of course, you know, like the timeline as we know it isn't complete. You know, there's other places that he may have gone that we're still trying to
So who's the woman?
Out.
And who made the phone call?
Right.
As I asked in the column the other day, is it a Hell Hath No Fury phone call? I'm told no.
Mm-hmm.
Just Josephine Citizen calling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But at one point I want to follow back on that. The series closes at 9.
Yeah, right.
So there's a big window of time before they come across him.
So I was told he left probably around 8:30, something like that. I don't know if they close it. Is it they close?
They're listed closing.
Was, okay,
might,
yeah, so that
might
makes
close
sense.
At 9
right,
formally, but then and he could have left, as you say, at 8:30,
something like that. Yeah.
But then on the other hand, you know, if the police chief of Chicago is drinking at your place, I mean, the last guy used to drink at the Turtle Club, right? So, you think they'd close? Like here he is, you
yeah,
know, big boss. Or you're in a restaurant, say, with a tiny little state's attorney who's a psycho and may become mayor.
True.
It's on 24th and Oakley. You think they close when he wants until
no,
he wants to
right,
go? Exactly.
But there's also.
But try the veal salt and boca because it's really good. I'm telling you.
But your liquor license, you know, is a lot of it's pursuant to how many seats you have, what your hours are going to be, and so if a company's doing it and there's someone sitting there, I mean, that alone is poor judgment, and not that it doesn't happen all the time, but in a very well lit or well known place, in a very, like you said,
so
well covered.
Who's the female? Is that the driver? Because that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. The woman he was with was a at the time, you know, that he met up with her, was a member of his security detail.
All right. There's so many stories going on.
And I believe he had one of three drivers. Yeah, he had one of three drivers, and she was one of them.
Is this the one that went to him to the Staples wedding with? In Indiana, with the evening gown on rather than the blazer and the gun?
That I have no idea.
See, there's so much that come to you. When you're the mayor of Chicago, people, it's like being a priest. People come to confess a lot of things. And it's just historically in the city. And also when you're a reporter or, you know,
mm-hmm,
beat reporter, like Jeremy knows all the cops and they know him. Or, you know, maybe a columnist once in a while. People do call, and there's so many stories. She's got to get that report out just to stop the stories.
Well, right, and you know that's the thing is that you know when she said, I'm paraphrasing here,
yes,
about you know this could be bad for his, you know, him and his family. his wife and his family. That obviously that led a lot of people guessing about what could they be talking about.
It lit up his personal life,
and
she's a lawyer, right. Man.
She's not one who chooses her words.
I don't think she's a prude. She's a grown up.
It just entices more questions. It just entices us reporters to ask more questions, which. And then, you know, in city government, when they talk about transparency, and of course the case is still under investigation, it just kind of begs the question, is now good a time as any to put this to rest so you can move on to more important things? I mean, you have Charlie Beck, interim police superintendent.
Politically correct Charlie Beck.
He's a marquee name in law enforcement in this country. And he's got a very important and very challenging job ahead of him. And I'm sure that she'd rather focus on that instead of, you know, what's going on now with her, with Eddie Johnson.
The earth can quiver and quake. The heavens shiver and shake. But hell hath no fury. Not half the fury of a woman who's been scorned.
Time to bring up some policy issues that many of the men and women in blue in this city have been calling me about. I'm sure you've gotten these calls, and I don't know if you got the calls, Jeff, but...
Yes.
It's that the Eddie Johnson thing, while the drama, I wrote a column saying it's like Days of Our Lives with guns, but underneath the soap opera, there's a real issue. And that issue is merit promotion. Mm-hmm. You know what merit promotion is? You ever hear of lieutenants, Jeff? You know what a lieutenant is?
I don't.
Okay, a lieutenant is a sergeant who got promoted meritoriously to sergeant and then was made meritoriously a lieutenant. They're called lieutenants. Not only white coppers, because the issue is often couched as, oh, these white guys are upset. It's not only white guys. It's minority police officers, black and brown, who aren't part of a clique.
Well, as you describe it in the column, I mean, it's the essence of the Chicago way. You find who's in your tribe in power, and then how do they help you out?
And then these groups that you promote without taking a test, help you so that they're all around these. It's like having political parties around candidates. These candidates are of commander rank and they keep moving up. And now we have a whole bunch at the top that don't have the respect of their men and women in blue. And Lightfoot is trying to find a replacement for Beck because Beck's interim. And how do you get there, Jeremy, when I'm told that City Hall, let's just put it that way, City Hall is convinced that there's really not much of a bench there.
You know, our City Hall team sat down with Lightfoot a few weeks ago about mm-hmm. this. This was when Beck was named the interim
right.
by Lightfoot.
Greg and Pratt and those guys.
Greg and John Byrne.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that she said was basically, it's like, so, you know, you look at New York City. New York City's outgoing police commissioner is James O'Neill. Mm-hmm. He just retired.
Right.
And within like 24 to 48 hours, they already had a new commissioner named, you know, right. somebody from the inside. Okay.
It's always preferable.
And, you know, that's something that I remember Lightfoot acknowledging to our City Hall team, that it seems that in Chicago, we have a little bit of a ways to go when it comes to that.
It's because of the merit promotions.
Well, right. I mean, that's what's been said. It's because of, right, these are the meritorious promotions. And then the next day at a press conference at City Hall, Lightfoot tried to kind of walk that back a little and say, hey, there's a lot of great talent.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You know, that's here, you know.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, that is just covering the beat, obviously. And I know, John, you've heard it too. It is a criticism among the rank and file and just in general in the police department. I know that, during the city council budget hearings, at least one alderman was asking Eddie Johnson about it. And, you know, he talked about how in the late 80s when he got here,
right.
the you know, there was there really wasn't a lot of African American representation in the supervisory ranks, and obviously that needed to change. I mean, not just for African Americans, but you
want to have the city, the command, and the police department reflect the culture of the people that it's.
Yeah, of course,
it's just part of it. And in the past, years ago, you know, many many years ago, generations ago, it was white and Irish. So if you were a Bohemian or a Jew or a Greek, you know, forget it, unless you had clout. And most of the clout was, can you drink with the commander? And then you get, you know, were you one of those guys? Were you part of that posse? So it's changed now. So then they went to tests. They said, let's do standardized tests. Well, here's the problem. They weren't passing the standardized tests. People were not passing the tests. Politically, nobody... That's the thing nobody wants to say is always the story. So the minority candidates, for whatever reasons, weren't getting enough numbers passing the test. So they said, uh-oh, let's go to merit. Okay. Well, merit is a good idea because not every good commander, you know, is a test taker, right? Then you're going to have all, the girls in Catholic school that sit in the first row. You know what I mean? They're going to take the test well. And that doesn't necessarily translate commanding police. Okay, I get that. But what happens is human nature. Human nature is, I'm going to take care of my friends. Or I'm going to take care of my girlfriends. And my friends will take care of their... I'll take care of my friends' girlfriends. They'll take care of my friends' girlfriend. You know what I mean? And it becomes a thing and a clique. Just like the old Irish thing. Now it's a clique. You know, there are white guys who are promoted as well. It's not just, but it's a clique around merit promotions that are, it's a bad deal because coppers are cynical by nature anyway. Who gets lied to most, Jeremy? Coppers or reporters? And then on top of that, you get this politics where people are commanding you and you know. They don't know what they're doing. They don't know the job. They don't have the chops for the job, but they're your boss. They don't say somebody.
Nothing's more frustrating than that.
Say somebody gets shot. There's a shooting. And somebody, I'm just taking hypothetically, but maybe this has happened, police officers who are listening. Somebody gets shot. And maybe one of these merit promoted lieutenants who are watch commanders don't want to leave their house. They want to, you know, because they're at home. You know, cooking dinner for their husband, and they don't want to go out and cover the... So they tell the sergeant, hey, Sarge, just write that report. And the sergeant dares to say, excuse me, Lieutenant, that's your job. Your job as watch commander is to write the report on the shooting. Mm-hmm. Now, I've been talking for 5 bleeping minutes.
It's your show, John.
I want to get this out that... What it really is, because men and women are talking about it, and it's not just old timey white guys sitting at a tavern, you know, with the Schlitz sign, you know, or the Hams beer waters, you know, the shiny water thing.
Right.
This is people, black officers too, everybody. Mm-hmm. What do you say, Jeremy?
I mean, so just from conversations I've had with cops, I mean, you know, you know, there's this idea that. It's not just in the police department, it's any job that you have. I mean, if you're somebody in an organization and you get promoted and you want people around you can trust, right? I mean, and that's the same.
That's human nature.
It's human nature, and you know, you see that in the police department, and there's always going to be a lot of naysayers about that. You know, again, this is just based on my conversations, but it's like anything in life. It's, you know, like one of the things I've asked is, you know, just because you're a good test taker, does that translate into being a good leader? And I've been told that there are obviously police officers who've received merit promotions who genuinely deserve the merit promotions because they're great police officers and they're hard workers and there are supervisors who recognize that. And then there are, but many cops I've spoken to have also alluded to what you're talking about, which is that it's who you know, it's what you know, it's not what you know, but it's really who you know. And
it's not changed. It just may be the pigment of...
And again, just based on who I've spoken to, obviously.
The skin pigment changes, but not the attitude. It's not human nature doesn't change. And now the feds have a rigorous, I'm told, and I'm going to start looking more into this, a rigorous merit promotion. And merit promotion is not bad. I think it's really the best way to promote, but not the Chicago way merit.
Nobody sent.
Unless she's really hot and she's been my girlfriend and my wife's at home, so I'll make her sergeant or something. I'm just saying hypothetically.
Right, yeah. You put somebody close to you right. That you're traveling with.
I'm laughing when I say hypothetically, but I've got to say that.
Grinning, absolutely. Yeah,
and so the feds have a rigorous one where they have panels of people cross-checking each other, interviewing the candidate, cross-checking each other, several.
Looking at their work. I mean, they're written or filing reports of all their way, so they're looking at how they're writing them, what
they're doing.
Their
supervisors. I mean, it's a real process. I think when you're with these cops, they've got so much stress, people don't understand. And people in the news business, I'm not saying you, Jeremy, but I know that other opinionators who've never been on the street in their life pass judgment on police officers for what they do in a pressure situation, like somebody spits on you and then they wag their finger from the ivory tower. I think some people don't know what they're talking about, but this issue is, to me, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I think it's something that Lori Lightfoot could really attack if she wants to show the rank and file that she's got their back. This would be one of them.
Well, in the DOJ report, you know, that came out a couple of years ago in the wake of the Laquan McDonald shooting, the Department of Justice actually did mention the meritorious process as a problem. I mean, they had a whole section on it, and in the report, they got into all the issues, John, that you just brought up. They called for more openness, really, in the process, because one of the complaints too is, you know, from officers, is that a lot really wasn't known about how supervisors and command staff choose candidates for meritorious promotion. So there's been, at least in the upper echelon, there's been rhetoric out there that they're, you know, under Superintendent Johnson, that they were trying to make things more transparent about that. But of course, just in the course of covering the beat all the time, sure. I mean, I still hear that there's still naysayers about that.
And their naysayers are always, you know, there are two people, Jeff, that two groups that complain about their bosses. And I just told Bruce Dold this the other day when we were talking. He happens to be my boss, editor and publisher of the Tribune. There are two groups that always bitch about their bosses, coppers and reporters. It's just true.
I love my boss.
Oh, I
John.
Love my boss too. Bruce, I love you, man. But people do, historically, right? Hypothetically. I mean, it's just the way it is because you're working on something, you're working on a story, and you think it's ready, and the editor's like, an editor says, you know, not enough here. And you're like, oh, damn it. It's like investigators and attorneys, you know, pull the trigger and we're not ready. You know, and there's the tension.
And speaking of Jeremy and the beat, I want to dive in a little bit into that. I love the idea. I mean, and John, we always have guests on, and I always have these weird fantasies in my head, or daydreams, if you call them, about them, how they work, like the FBI with the strings, or, you know, meeting in dark corners. How do you get to the trust of cops to tell you stuff? Because obviously, and not naming sources, because they would never do that. But I mean, cops talk to you, and they talk to you regularly, and you know, lots of them. How do you get that? I mean, that cops aren't, generally speaking,
trusting
people. You know, they're very have an edge. They've seen everything that people do in their worst times. So how does that work?
Well, look, I mean, it's just like any beat reporter. I mean, I've done this a long time. So, I mean, there's some who, you know, like to talk to me, and there's some I know who don't. I mean, and I'm sure that, you know, the city hall reporters get that from politicians. You know, there's people who like them, people who don't. You know, I'm sure, you know, whoever covers, you know, Mary on transportation, you know, I'm sure that
Mary was
Wisniewski. Yeah. I mean, right. You know, whoever's a beat reporter, I'm sure encounters people on their beats every day who like them and don't like them. Yeah. I mean, there is persistence. You know, I used to call around the police stations. I haven't done that in years and years, but there was a time you could do that. When I was at the City News Bureau.
See, that's the key.
That's the stuff I love. So I want to, like, give me a little bit of that. Because, I mean, you're cold calling police stations to get random numbers.
And this was like,
it was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul Zimbrakos and Joe Riley.
You know, they had the FOP book, you know, which has phone numbers of every relevant city phone number. You know, we're going way back. I know they still make them, but... yeah, I mean, this was like 15 years ago. We used to call the police areas, station, call the areas, call the districts, you know, anything going on? No, click. Anything going on? No, click.
Anything going on, Sergeant? That's Detective Sergeant to you. No, click.
And then, you know, but there's some who are very, very chatty, and it's funny. I mean, I have friends who work in sales, and it's the same thing. And when you see movies about, you know, sales floors where... they make 100 cold calls and, you know, you might get one maybe out of that, you know, and then 99 no's. I mean, it's just, that's how it was. So I developed sources like that. Also, I mean, I used to go to crime scenes. Over the years, I would say like probably like the one reporter who's gone to most of them, Peter Nikias, has gone to probably more than any of them. But I mean, you know, I've been doing this a long time, so I've gone to a lot of them as well. So that's another way where cops, you know, if they see my face, I see them, you know, they'll, you know, they're more likely to open to you.
And they
I imagine sidling up to like a detective or whoever on the scene, be like, well, how's the weather today? Oh, what's going on here? You know, that kind of thing. And it just becomes
it's
a
been
personal
a while,
relationship.
But yeah. Yeah.
Look,
I mean,
they read what he writes.
And then,
and then they see if he's fair. And then they still don't make a move. And then Jeremy was writing at City News for years. He was around. People saw him. They saw what kind of guy he was. And then after a while, somebody takes a chance. And then when that guy doesn't get burned or that woman doesn't get burned, then somebody else says, maybe I'll take a chance. And that's how it's built over, right, Jeremy?
Mm-hmm,
over
mm-hmm.
time.
Yeah.
Sorry to sound like
no.
Methuselah of reporting.
No, you were a beat reporter once,
yes,
Scott. I mean.
Just a bit. I walked over 9918 Ewing Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Carlene Gutierrez, 16. The first homicide that I walked, that I covered. I'll never forget the first one. I've forgotten a lot of them since, but that's how it works, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until somebody decides to take a chance, and then you're at a police station, and there's a big jailbreak, and two alleged cop killers. One of them jumps out the window while he's handcuffed, and then all of a sudden they solve the jailbreak.
Mm-hmm.
How does that happen? Stuff happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, sometimes you'll be lucky enough to get a little text or a phone call about that sort of thing.
You got to get the private line, because I think one thing that's happened, Jeremy, over the years since you've been a police reporter is that there was a certain openness that the city, particularly under Rich Daley and then Rahm, shut down. They squeeze, so all information has to come from news affairs, where it used to come from review offices, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Openly, where they're doing the review, you know, they're looking at the police reports, that's what you call, and all that has been bad for the police department, I think, because they don't, it's all controlled info.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, you know, like I was telling Jeff, is, you know, when we called around at police stations, I mean, I was at City News in the mid-2000s, and I mean, that was a time, and look, you can look in the old Tribune clips on crime reporting, and you will regularly see a watch commander being quoted by rank and first and last name in a newspaper.
Right.
You know, if you look at old clips from like the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
John O'Brien.
Yeah, John. You know, John.
With John Kiss.
Right, with John Kiss.
Right.
Bill Rechtenwald.
Yeah.
You know, you would see watch commanders regularly be quoted in the papers, and then, you know, up until probably about the mid-2000s, and you know, that was around the time, like I said, Jeff. You know, we'd be able to freely call around the police stations and all that sort of stuff. That kind of stuff has really kind of fallen by the wayside, and I mean, it could probably it probably could have to do with a lot of things. I mean, and, you know, in addition to covering, you know, just street crime or in violence and so on and so forth. I mean, I cover a lot of police accountability stories. I cover a lot of stories that, no doubt, probably I'm sure upset the police department. And but, you know, when you're a police reporter, you have to do those stories. I mean, and obviously there have been some scandals over the years that we've aggressively had to pursue, just like every other media outlet in town that's upset a lot of people. So, I mean, maybe that's one reason why it's fallen on the wayside. And that's had the ripple effect up to City Hall, where, you know, the Daley administration, the Emanuel administration, didn't want to be as open with us because of that. They wanted to be extra careful about what's released to the public, which...
They act like this is... they're the kings of the city, and they're not. Mm-hmm. The people should have a... If there was a better relationship... And you know what? Coppers sometimes are thin-skinned, too. Mm-hmm. Some of the same cops who said to me, you bleep, 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 I can't, you know, really say what they say, are now calling me going, hey, thanks about that merit thing. You're really fair. Well, I'm really fair when I'm doing stuff you like, and I'm really unfair when I do stuff you don't like. I mean, that's just part of the gig.
Right.
Yeah. Jeremy, so what's next with this investigation? How many more heads will roll? And are we ever going to find out who's who and who... Who's what on merit promotions, and especially the lieutenants and the GFs, the girlfriends?
I mean, if you look online, there have been, you know, several PDF documents in the last several years that have that somebody, I believe, obtained through a Freedom of Information Act request, which, you know, has lists of, you know, who received a merit promotion from patrol officer to detective, you know, to sergeant, to lieutenant. And they're pretty long lists, and it also lists who their sponsors were. Sponsors meaning who was the commander on the command staff who sponsored them for those promotions. And that kind of stuff's been around for several years already.
But how many chiefs and deputy chiefs passed the written exam for lieutenant?
Right.
Do we know? I said maybe one. Do we know?
I don't know offhand.
Everybody, listen, it's jscass@chicagotribune.com. If you're a copper, you probably know already. If you know the answer, how many chiefs or deputy chiefs have ever passed the lieutenant's exam or the written or the sergeant's? Let me know, because the police department is bigger than personality. Jeremy, in closing, what's your favorite go-to Chinese restaurant on the South Side that you and old school Willie like so much? You know, that one that you go
to? Well, I liked House of Bing on South Shore Drive. Will hated it.
I remember that debate on this very podcast.
House of Bing.
Can I say that he hated it? Is that?
Yeah, you can say he didn't like it.
He didn't like it. He didn't hate it. He just,
not his favorite.
Look, I'm walking. Yeah, I know. I'm walking back what I said. I liked it a lot. He wasn't really that big of a fan.
He goes. He alternates because of his delicate constitution between tapioca pudding or give me some more hot sauce. That's how he is. You know, you never know with Will.
I mean, look, House of Bing. I used to drive past that place all the time, and it stuck
on
out
the
like
way
a
home
sore
from
thumb.
Area too.
Yeah, right. Actually, I think so.
Yeah,
I mean, and just taking a ride down South Shore Drive, you know, along the golf course there, and you know, the old buildings, of course, you know, it's just there's a Chinese restaurant in the middle of this strip of old buildings, so it was always just a curiosity of mine. Like, we got to go there, and I was giving Will a ride home one night, and we went there, and I was like, this place is great, and Will was like, eh. You know,
what does he know about food? I've taught him everything, Will Lee. I've taught you everything about food, Valari especially.
Yeah,
Jeremy Gorner, police reporter, criminal justice reporter of the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for being here, man.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for the insights.
Sure. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks.
Remember what I said, please. Find us on iTunes. Subscribe to this podcast. Write us a kick-ass review, because you know what? Where else are you going to hear this? Where else are you going to hear this? And go see that movie, No Safe Spaces, or Jeremy Gorner of the Chicago Tribune talking about Eddie Johnson and merit promotion and Days of Our Lives with Guns, who looks good in a gown and makes sergeant. And for Ray Long on that fascinating story he's been working on with Jason Meisner about Boss Madigan and the feds and that bus that keeps rolling with Rico driving it. And for Jeff Carlin, WGN executive producer of The Rokon Show, and me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist, editorial board member of the Chicago Tribune. America was supposed to be a safe space for all ideas. Let's keep it that way. See you next time.